Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
I call upon all of you to wage a second American nonviolent revolution, to use civil disobedience, and to demand that this president leave town, to get out, to put the Quran, down, to get up off his knees, and to figuratively come up with his hands out.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work, Langer's.
It is the Savage Nation. Over the weekend, there was a protest by real Americans as opposed to non-Americans. The non-Americans were welcomed with open arms by Nancy Pelosi and the other superb American legislators, while World War II vets and their supporters were locked out of World War II and Vietnam memorials by Obama. Now, I have a question for you. Actually, I have no question for you. I'm analyzing this, and I say to myself, is Obama behind locking the veterans out of their own memorial? Do you know what they did today? Did you hear what they did today? Did you hear what Obama's thugs did today? They chain-linked the memorials closed. Now, you know that costs money than leaving them open, so it's out of pure spite. So who is doing this? Is it Obama? Is it one of the women behind Obama? Is it someone Obama doesn't know? Because I will tell you this. Whoever is locking the veterans, some of whom are disabled, away from their memorials is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, number one, and they're committing elder abuse, number two. As you well know, we're a very sensitive nation, and the nation bends over backward for the disabled. And as you well know, airlines and others have to bend over backward for people with a cane or a wheelchair. And Obama here is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by not permitting these memorials to be accessible to the handicapped. Now, you can also add to that and say he's committing elder abuse by locking old men away from their memorials, couldn't you? But does it not matter to you? That's why I'm saying you're burned out. I know that. I know this is not a big issue for most people because most of us are not World War II vets. We're not Vietnam veterans. Our problems with Obama are really about his denigration of America the Great, high taxes, immigration, energy policy, gun control, and gay marriage. I told you this last week, and I asked you what are your grievances. But I feel that harping on grievances is not enough of a radio show. I listen to it off and on all day long, and I turn it off. I can't listen to it anymore. And I know as much about it as anyone in the country. It's awful. It's going to get worse. And so what I've done for you today is I put together some wonderful family stories that are published in my newly released book, Family Stories for the Holidays, Train Tracks by Michael Savage, which just happens to be out, yes, in paperback, I'm very proud to tell you. All of the stories that you've come to love, Dead Man's Pants, Love by the Sewer Treatment Plant, The Diet of a Young Savage, Louie and the Monkey, Savage's Crazy Friend, Woodchuck Bill, Two Finger Teacher, First Autopsy, Half Man and Half Woman, The Yawn Man Gets Cancer, Fat Al's Tuna, First Dead Body, Shady Podiatrist and the Jaguar, Herbie the Schlub and Other Memories. They're all in paperback in Train Tracks, and I can take requests for them after I do the news headlines, which I'm going to do. I'm going to do news headlines every 30 minutes, and I'm going to play some of these songs for you, not so much as a filibuster, but as just a break from it all, because I myself have had all I can take. Obama is perhaps not only the most divisive president looking to cause a civil war, he's certainly provoking as much unrest as he can in America and around the world. That's a given. You don't have to be blind to see what he's doing. Do you have to be blind to see what the man is doing? But now to attack veterans like this and to realize he's alienating all of the veterans and their families in the country, you got to say why. Who's advising him? Well, I don't know who's advising him. I have no idea why they would do a thing like this. It costs more to lock up a barrier in front of a war memorial than it does to leave the war memorial open. Why would he do that, other than to be mean? So I'll take requests. Which stories from Train Tracks would you like to hear again and again? I'll just read them to you, or I'll play them for you. I'll play for you Boy in the Basement, the Dead Man's Pants, Louie and the Monkey. Whichever one of these stories you want to hear, I will play for you. Or we can talk about something unserious, like Where Are the Missing Nukes? I mean, I talked about it Friday. You missed that one. Well, all the other talk radio hosts were rehashing each other's talking points on Friday. Dr. Savage strove to discuss the issues about, number one, the firing of not one but two Air Force generals who are overseeing the nuclear missile program. Obama did that last week. Now, this came along with chilling warnings by airlines that Muslim terrorists had been carrying out dry runs for future attacks on U.S. airplanes. I'm worried about national security right now, I said on Friday. There were reports of dry runs by women in burqas, possibly rehearsing a terrorist attack. Pilots were warning passengers not to let their guards down. And I said, notice it wasn't nuns wearing habits causing trouble on the plane either. Yet we heard nothing about these dry runs from the so-called TSA or any of the other individuals in charge of our national security. Instead, we learned that the generals in charge of Air Force nuclear missiles were fired this week. Why? There were no real charges. They were fired for no reason. Here are generals who had devoted their lives to our country and its safety, and they were thrown out on fake accusations. It's as though we're living in the former Soviet Union. All of this is in my newsletter for Monday, October 14th, 2013. I'll take a request right now at, I don't even know my number here, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Here are questions for the Savage Nation. The U.S. Army has defined a Christian ministry known as the American Family Association as a domestic hate group because they don't like homosexuals. You heard me. I told you the day would come. I told you what would happen. The U.S. Army has defined a Christian ministry as a domestic hate group, along with the Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party, the neo-Nazis, and the Black Panthers. That's right. They have turned a mainstream Christian ministry into a hate group. You are now living in a madhouse under Barack Hussein Obama, who is trying to, well, do I have to say again over and over every day the same thing? I'm not going to say it. I made my point over and over again. I'll take requests. Margie on WWIQ, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
I would love to hear Dead Man's Pants. I've never heard it before.
Okay, now hold on. I'm not going to play it right now. I'm going to take requests before I play anything. We'll run a little poll. Why do you want to hear Dead Man's Pants? What is it about the title that intrigues you?
Well, knowing how you tell stories, I figure it's got to be interesting. And I can't imagine why you would be wearing the pants of a dead man.
Well, let's hope I'm not wearing a dead man's pants in the near future, and I'm not the man whose pants I'm wearing. but all of these stories are in my paperback Train Tracks, Margie. I don't have any to give out this week, honestly. I didn't even get them yet, but they're in the stores. I give you one, I can't. But please go to your neighborhood bookstore tomorrow and at least read the story in the bookstore. Are there any other requests out there? Because I will keep doing news headlines today. And Margie, you stay on the line. You'll hear that story later on. But just in time for the holidays, I have a celebration of family, home, and tradition by the number one New York Times best-selling author and superstar media personality. That's right. The holidays are coming. And that's the time when families gather and reflect on the past year to remember losses, to toast triumphs, to look forward to new beginnings. And in the spirit of this season, your beloved talk show host and author, Michael Savage, has reissued Train Tracks in paperback to remind you how every member of your family, in fact, each individual we encounter through time, will contribute in some way to our life story. Now, in the title chapter set in the early 1950s, I, Michael Savage, remember the excitement and mystery of riding the train from New York's old Penn Station to rural Pennsylvania at the start of the holiday break. Drawn from Savage's own journey from poor immigrant son to media stardom, these deeply personal true tales show us that even in today's homogenizing times, we are all charting a unique destiny as we journey through life. Train Tracks is an instant holiday classic, they said. And the Washington Post, strangely enough, wrote this. Savage recalls his childhood growing up in the Bronx. He's got the knack for evocative detail. features some indelible images. That's the best they could say. Anyway, Train Tracks, paperback, out in the bookstore. I'll take your requests all through the show, and we will play one cut per hour for the rest of the week to get us away from the sequester, the slow down, the cut down, you know, the Obama down, because it's a downer. It's a downer to listen to this day in and day out. There's got to be something else we can do on radio other than talk about how bad Obama has wrecked the country and what he's trying to do. If you want to ask me what we should do about the slowdown, I say shut her down. I say shut her down and fire 800,000 government employees, because if the country is functioning without them, then we don't need them. It's that simple. Do you understand what I just said to you? Your life hasn't been affected by the slowdown, so what should you care if there's a slowdown? Shut it down. Fire them. Fire 800,000. They're non-essential employees. Of course we need a government. Of course we need certain elements of the government. No one's arguing with that. You got to be crazy to think we don't need a government. But we don't need a government as big as this. We don't need non-essential jobs. There are non-essential for a reason. They're called non-essential. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So you're hearing about shutdown, slowdown, like the world's coming to an end. And yet there are 800,000 federal employees who are not furloughed and will not be paid, right? But there are non-essential federal workers. For example, national parks. Now, why would Obama set up new barricades and wire them in front of the World War II memorials, the World War II and Vietnam veterans memorials, when it costs more money to set up the barriers than to leave them open to the public? Who are the other non-essential workers? Well, plenty of them. Superfund cleanup, they're furloughed. Food inspectors are furloughed. The panda cam at the National Zoo is furloughed. Food programs are furloughed. Now, school lunches, though, for low-income students are not affected. Food stamps were not affected. But certain other programs were cut back, which, of course, we don't need. The WIC program. How many programs can we, the taxpayer, afford? You know, which leads to the next question. There is a revolution emerging in Europe. Far-right parties are rising throughout Europe. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon. In France, the Le Pen party under the woman, Marie Le Pen, who is the daughter of, well, obviously her father. Her father was tied to World War II era right-wing talk in France, which had a tinge of anti-Semitism in it. The daughter has no such tinge. She's simply a nationalist and an anti-immigration activist. She said France can no longer afford all of this flood of immigrants, particularly Muslims, who, frankly, to her, are eating them alive and destroying their culture. So her party is surging in France. Why is the far-right non-racist rising in Europe, while in America, anyone who dares stand up to this communist dictatorship in America, this divisive communist dictatorship that has emerged in America in the government media complex, smeared? And where is the right wing in America? You can't say, for example, that by any means is Rand Paul a right winger. He's a libertarian. You can smear Ted Cruz all you want, and I won't do it. He's not a right winger. He never mentions borders, language, and culture. So where is America's right-wing movement? The answer is we don't know. But I can guarantee you something right now, and I'm going to have more on this. I can't even hint at it right now, but I'm going to hint at it right now. When my show moves to drive time, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern and 12 to 3 p.m. Pacific time beginning January 1st, I'm going to have a little more news for you about a true nationalist party in the United States of America. I may have a lot more news for you. So stay tuned, because don't assume this is just going to be an entertainment vehicle. No, it won't be. My stethoscope is about as accurate as anyone's political stethoscope in this country. And this country has long been a center-right country. The problem is that Obama has seized the government, and with the help from his leftist friends, you would think they are the mainstream. They are not the mainstream. They're a small group of far-left out of the mainstream radicals who have seized the country. That is why they're firing generals. That is why they're spitting in the eye of World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans. That is why they're calling anybody who disagrees with them names, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. I am going to tell you this. If a candidate who was articulate emerged for the 2016 presidential election, who could articulate my message, borders, language, and culture, and stay on message, by the way, and not let anyone distract him or her, if anyone had the ability to do that, I don't say they would win. I would say they'd pull 12% of the popular vote, which would be enough to destroy the Republican Party forever. And certain things are better off destroyed, by the way, than allowed to die on their own accord. Because as far as I can tell, the Republicans cannot win the next election. See, I didn't mean to get into politics. They've already lost it. They've thrown it to Hillary Clinton. It's a given. The power structure on Wall Street and the international bankers have decided that Hillary will be the next president. The Republicans are just going through the paces, as you can see. Ted Cruz can't win. Alan West, who I admire enormously, could never win for obvious reasons. Rand Paul can't win. But I can guarantee you that anyone who comes across with my message of borders, language, and culture and sticks to it from the beginning to the end of his campaign or her campaign would pull 12 to 18% of the popular vote and fracture the Republican Party and destroy them once and for all. And that would allow a new nationalist party to emerge in its place. Out with the dead wood and out with the old, in with the new. That's what I think could happen. I'm going to have a lot more to say about that come January 2014, right on these airwaves, but at a different hour. So don't think that I'm just here for a little entertainment factor here. For Obama to be doing what he's doing and get away with it without an actual riot occurring is a miracle to me. Let's take, well, we're running out of time. I just got started. So anyway, if you care to comment on any of the political topics or call for your requests, do so. When I come back from the break, I'm going to play one of these requests right off the top. I think we will play Dead Man's Pants from Michael Savage's brand new paperback bestseller, Train Tracks, Family Stories for the Holidays. The family stories that even liberals have come to love me for.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, I'm going to give you some news headlines, sort of every 30 minutes, and then I'm going to read a story from my new paperback, Train Tracks, Family Stories for the Holidays. And the story that everyone seems to like the most is Dead Man's Pants for some reason. But give me a moment before we get there. Let's go to the best website for news, and that's the Drudge Report. Headline, unions poised to win delay of Obamacare tax and budget deal. You hear this? Do you have any idea how many of Obama's cronies are exempt from Obamacare? I read you the list last week. Anybody who can lobby Obama and bring a satchel of M&Ms to him can be exempt from the Health Care Act. People with household income who is low, they don't have to file a federal income tax return, you're exempt. People who are part of a federally recognized tribe, you're exempt. People are in jail or prison, you're exempt. People who are currently uninsured for less than 3 months of the year, you're exempt. People who are a member of a recognized health care sharing ministry, whatever that means, you're exempt. There are many other people who are exempt. Would you like to hear them? People who experience a hardship can claim an exemption. Now, what's a hardship? Whatever a mean-faced, clipped-haired bureaucrat says is a hardship is a hardship. If you had a close family member die recently, even if you're worth $1 billion and you're Warren Buffett, that's considered a hardship. If you wear suits made of out of vicuna fur, but you had a family member die recently, that's a hardship. You're exempt. I'm not making any of this up. It's a scandal-ridden program from day one, and that's who exempt. So that's who is exempt. What else is in the Drudge Report? NSA collecting contacts from 500,000 buddy lists each day. Hey, youngsters. Hey, you fools who elected that cool guy, Obama. You're paying for everyone else's health care, you young idiots. And your buddy lists are now going to some unnamed, unknown fascist sitting in a dark room somewhere collecting data. Now let's go to Dead Man's Pants from Train Tracks on the Savage Nation. Yes, let's go to Train Tracks. Dead Man's Pants.
Of all the people, savagely, they say, you know, I loved your childhood stories, and the most interesting one to me was Dead Man's Pants. So now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Dead Man's Pants. Growing up in the Bronx as I did, the man child in the promised land, I didn't have many of the luxuries most kids with their hats on back would take for granted today. My father was an immigrant. He worked his fingers to the bone. We simply didn't have the money to afford more than the basics, so as you might expect, I cherished and took care of the things I had. As a kid, I'd line up my shoes under my bed at night, neat, like in the military. I made sure they were polished, too. I'm sure some shrink today would say I suffered from ADD or other compulsive behavior disorders and should have been put on a regimen of drugs. I wonder what they say about the fact that through most of my youth I wore secondhand pants from Dead Men. Many of the pants I wore as a preteen came off of stiffs cut down to fit me. Now don't get me wrong, my father was a good man. He ran a small antique store with mostly 19th century stuff. On the side, at least in the beginning, he sold used goods as well. A man's got to do what a man's got to do to make ends meet, right? Occasionally he would go to an auction after a man died and buy the entire estate. The clocks, the dishes, the mirrors, whatever the man had. The pants, the shirts, the whole deal. You get the picture? Back at the store, as he sorted the stuff for resale, he'd take a closer look at the suit. Once he got a hot shafter and mark suit from a dead man. Now, what's he going to do? Toss it in the garbage like they do today? In those days, it wasn't in him to throw out a good worsted fabric. Instead, he brought home the pants to me. I remember my father called me to the bedroom and showed them to me like the head tailor at Nordstrom's department store. He'd say, "Now, Michael, get a good look at the fabric." I wanted to vomit. I got a migraine because I knew what was coming. "Take a look at the quality of this fabric." He's working me like a salesman. He's unrolling the pants on the bed. I can see it to this day. He unrolls it like he's selling me a bolt of hand-woven cloth. He would say, "You can't get fabric like this anywhere." I wanted to say, "Of course not, Dad. They only sell stuff like that for men who died." You know, it was like special clothing for the undertaker. Even if I had said something, that wouldn't have changed one thing. He'd go downtown and the pants would come back fit for me. You know, shortened without the legs taken in properly. I'm sorry. They ended up baggy like an Abbott and Costello pair of pants. Even if they had fit me properly, there was something repugnant about the whole idea. Like I said, I knew how to make do with whatever was at hand. There's an old saying, the man with no shoes complains until he meets the man with no feet. The fact that I didn't have much more than a place to sleep in my first little apartment after college was okay with me. At least I wasn't wearing dead man's pants. Little did I know that one day those awful pants would serve as a metaphor for the shift in my political orientation. You might find it interesting that I wasn't always an independent conservative. I was raised a Democrat, blue-collar home. My dad was a Democrat, my mom was a Democrat, most of my relatives still vote Democrat. To an immigrant family whose parents came of age during the Great Depression, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the great white savior. Aside from being the only U.S. president re-elected to office three times, he gained lasting political mileage with the relief that his New Deal offered. As you might expect, then, my father used to tell me, "Michael, all I know is the Democrats are for the little guy and the Republicans are for big business." In a way, his attempt to sell me on the political leanings of the Democrat Party was no different than his sales job with the dead man's pants. He was selling me a failed ideology that should have been buried long ago. So as a young man, not seeing things as clearly as I do now, I voted as my dad did, since I didn't understand politics. But as I grew older, that view would change completely. The turning point in my thinking can be traced back to my first job out of college as a social worker in the Upper West Side of New York. All of my so-called clients were minorities. Now, I was a good liberal at the time, having had my brain washed at one of the city universities in New York by a whole slew of European immigrants who, instead of kissing the ground when they got here, urinated on the sacred soil and the flag and immediately sought to instill communist philosophy in the minds of the young, myself included. I didn't know that at the time. I was just a wide-eyed liberal kid with an eye on changing the world. There I was, fresh out of Queens College. Having minored in sociology, I figured I'd take a job as a social worker to save the, quote, oppressed minority. I was always an idealist. I still am, as a matter of fact. But the abuses of the welfare system that I saw back then nauseated me and started me on my slow road to recovery. Day after day, I found person after person who was working, who had a job, but who claimed they didn't so they could get their government handout. Worse, they knew they were ripping off the welfare system and didn't bat an eye. How could I be so sure these hucksters weren't swindling Uncle Sam? I mean, you could argue that they were oppressed and didn't know the rules. Not me. At a young age, I learned a valuable lesson on how to spot people who smiled to your face while robbing you blind the second your back was turned.
Savage.
Well, that was Dead Man's Pants from my paperback Train Tracks in bookstores now. And it's interesting. It's actually a good mix, the way it was put together. And it's exactly as it is in the book. I read it from the book. That's interesting. What I did was I took the Dead Man's Pants story and tied it into the political system today, where many idealistic young people don't even realize how they're being ripped off. Or shall I say, the right word is not ripped off. They're just being used the way young people are always used. They're idealists. All young people are. If they're good, they're idealists. Yeah, what's the old saying? If you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind. You ever hear that one? Train Tracks, Michael Savage, trying to mix some politics in with some stories. I'll play one at the middle of the next hour as well. We're taking requests from you on the Savage Nation. The phone number is 855-400-7282. Let's go to a caller on WHON. And is that Hawaii or where? What's H-I? I didn't know I was on in Hawaii. And the name is House? Who's? Mr. Who's? Mr. Who's, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Yeah, well, it's good talking to you, Michael Savage. Yeah, the name is House Johnson.
You simply... Sorry, I didn't pronounce it properly. Are you listening live in Honolulu?
Well, no, this is only on the Internet.
Oh, okay, so you're listening on W Internet, I get it.
Right, yeah, Internet. But your story about Dead Man's Pants, that's quite phenomenal, okay? Kind of like Tim Russert, but Savage... As a black man listening to you, well, I talked to Al Sharpton House, but I listened to you. But your story is like Tim Russert. Do you remember Tim Russert's story? His dad...
I remember Tim Russert, but I don't remember his stories. Were they along these lines? I don't remember them.
Were along these lines. His dad used to drive a garbage truck, and he used to take him on the routes with him.
Well, Tim Russert was fit for that. He learned well at how to dispense garbage.
And when you come out with your show at 6, I'm going, okay, everything stops. Savage is on the radio. And
oh,
man,
isn't that nice? So you live in Hawaii, do you, House?
Honolulu, Hawaii, Oahu.
You used to... where, can I ask where? I used to live there. I'm just curious. What part of town?
The McCully area.
Oh, McCully Chop Suey. Is it still up there on Waianae Drive?
Right there, King and McCully.
You see? My mind still works. You want to hear something funny, House? This is interesting. I was reminiscing the other day about my first months in Hawaii, and I went to that very Chop Suey place with some friends from the college, and they served food, you know, Chinese food, and in the soup there was some white globules, which I thought was fat, and I wouldn't eat it. I said to him, why would they serve soup with globules of white fat in it? And my friends, being from California, snickered at me because they knew more than I did about everything.
Right.
And they said, that's not fat. They said, that's a stuff called tofu.
Yes.
So that was my introduction to the anti-fat called tofu. And it was right in that restaurant, House, I swear to you.
Michael Savage, it's still there. It's a black building. It still has the little green gas lights around the outside. Okay.
House, that is so nice to hear that you like the show. Do you mainly like the stories? Is that what you like?
Hell no. We listen to Michael Savage. I mean, the stuff you come up with, how you did on Obama. But, Savage, you already gave your answer to what we're getting ready to turn into, which is Honolulu, okay? Oahu. Savage, here the question is, why did you, I don't know if you can remember it, but why did you say you left Hawaii with your family? Or to be start a family. Why did
I left Hawaii because of the... I'm going to tell you like it is. You know, I tend not to hold things back. My little boy was entering the first grade, and being a Caucasian boy, he was picked on a daily basis by the lovely, kind third worlders and the indigenous folks who hated Howleys.
Yep.
And I made a decision I would not subject my son to racism. By putting him to go. See, I didn't have the money to send him to a private school like Obama went to.
Right, right.
So I was too poor to send him to a private school, and I didn't want him to be having to face everyday racism that exists in Hawaii. I mean, I know it exists, and it must be taught a lot toward black people, too. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
I mean, I can guarantee you that the black people are not treated very well locally in Hawaii. Because I had a friend, Harold, who owned a Thai restaurant there, who was a Vietnam vet, came back, married a Thai woman, came back, and opened up a Thai restaurant in downtown Honolulu, which, by the way, was the best Thai food I ever had in my life. I've never been able to find food as good ever since. It's all been watered down in America into some sugar broth. I can't even eat it. But Harold told me all the stories about a black man in Honolulu at the time. He just, you know, he just lived it. He said the heck with him. He didn't care. He didn't let him bother him. But he faced it, as I'm sure you feel it under the surface.
But, Michael, why do you think they all work under 30 hours? Because Hawaii, in the early 90s, had, if you work, your employer must pay for your insurance. So they all work under 30 hours to get under that cap. That is what we're turning into. And you're the baddest on radio. I can't think of anybody better than you. And I've been talking on the radio, KGO, Al Sharpton Show, and Michael Savage for, oh, God, 30 years. Retired Farrell, I know you know him. He used to be here in the Bay Area.
That's right. Well, I am so honored to have you as a listener. You're an unusual listener in an unusual place, and I want to thank you for your insightful comments and for provoking memory lane in me. Again, ladies and gentlemen, we're doing a mixture on the show this week. It's somewhat new in a way because it's going to be kind of a whole sequence. I'll do the news. And at the 30-minute breaks, I'm going to do the news, and then I'm going to do a story from Train Tracks, my paperback book, because I think you're going to love these stories. If I'm remembered for anything, in addition to my statement, borders, language, and culture, I would think that Michael Savage will be remembered as a broadcaster who took storytelling art to a new level. And I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
5 to 9 here on KSFO.
It is the Savage Nation. It's a nice time of year over on the mainland. If you, even on the West Coast, we have an autumn, and it's already in the air. Hot days, cool nights, leaves falling off our deciduous trees. Of course, there's nothing to compare with the East Coast, obviously, the New England, and I have to tell you that. I haven't seen that in so many years, I forgot what it looks like, the turning of the colors. Don't call me on that. There's no need to say I saw them last year with Maud, and we loved it, and then we made love in a Queen Anne bed in a little inn. Please, just the thought of it. No, I don't want to hear anything about it. Look, the fact is that if you have email, as I do, my email's acting up. I guess the CIAOL mail is down right now. The CIAOL mail is off for a while, and I guess they're culling so many messages that the government computer's overloaded. Yep, the CIAOL is down, but then again. The biggest takeaway message of tonight's show from the Savage Nation thus far, if you just tuned in, I would give you two messages. One, Savage said, come January 1 when his show moves to Drive Time, East Coast, he's going to make a big announcement about the formation of a, let us say, and I don't mean me, but the formation of a nationalist party. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to tell you about that. And that today, by closing down the World War II and Vietnam veteran memorials, Obama is actually violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, and he is committing elder abuse. You can laugh at it all you want. Laugh all you want. Obama is doing exactly what liberals say they never do, which is attacking handicapped people. You can take that to the bank. 855-400-7282. Again, in the next hour, news headlines, and then we're going to play one other popular story from my new paperback book, Train Tracks. So if you have a request, give us a call. Adam on WABC, go ahead, please.
Mike, just wanted to say hello. My dad went to Jamaica High School, and since you're reminiscing tonight, I was wondering if you could play some Cleftones, Heart and Soul.
Yes. Well, the Cleftones were a group that came out of Jamaica High School. Did you know that, Adam? Did you know they came from Jamaica High School, the Cleftones?
I did not know that.
Oh, wait. You said your father went to Jamaica High and you wanted to hear the Cleftones. That was just by accident?
Yes.
Well, we're playing Heart and Soul now by the Cleftones. Funny, it was mainly a white school, but, you know, there was a black population because Jamaica, New York, had a large African-American population. And these kids were in the school, and they made such a big hit, they became the Cleftones. Everybody loved them. Notice in the lyrics, there's no hatred, there's no anger, there's no vulgarity, nothing. How is that possible? How is it possible that people could dance to music that wasn't vulgar? And the tongues didn't have to fall out of their mouths. How is that possible? It's beautiful music. Anyway, the question is, what happened to America? The answer is, who knows, and say bye-bye. Look, life moves forward. Things change. Countries change. Mores change. Life goes on. That's all. Things change. And that's as simple as that. So you want to sit and talk about the past forever, no one's going to listen to you. But, you know, I think that my book, Train Tracks, although they're stories about my childhood, they have kind of a universal meaning and touch to them. In other words, what is in the past about me telling you about Dead Man's Pants? Nothing. Or what if I wrote about Woodchuck Bill? What would you say? It's about some old man reminiscing? No. Or what if I told you about Fat Pat and Tippy the Dog? What does that have to do with when it was written or what it was about? Or what if I wrote a story called Louie and His Crazed Monkey? Why would that be stuck in the past? I mean, would you say the same thing about literary greats? What, their stories are in the past? They're stuck in the past because there's not enough gay and lesbian themes or not enough hatred in their stories? So you mean you could understand what I'm facing as an author and a broadcaster in that I broadcast in some ways a classical show. And my stories are classical stories. That's what I think. And that's why I think it's worthwhile playing them for you, discussing them, mixed in with the news. And that's what I'm going to do for you for the rest of this week. The minute I come back, we'll have all of the news headlines on the Savage Nation. Glad to hear about. Interesting. The barricades is a big story, but I think it's been played out. Michael Savage, borders, language, culture. You have a problem with that? What's your problem with my motto of borders, language, and culture? What's your problem? What's your problem with borders, language, and culture? What's your problem?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Blue Monday, how are you, Blue Monday? Got to work like a slave all day. Here come Tuesday.
It's The Savage Nation, the most skeptical show in radio. Now, in the last hour, I talked about a number of topics. I made some hints at some predictions. I read from my paperback Train Tracks. But I made one salient point, I think, amongst many. And that is, by shutting down the World War II Memorial and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial, Obama and his minions are actually violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, and they are committing elder abuse. I will repeat that in case you missed it. Mr. Sensitive Liberal, the man who lectures everyone about how we must be tolerant, especially of illegal aliens and those who would put a bomb in our mother's house in the name of religion. The man who preaches the most tolerance is in fact violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by closing off access to these memorials. Disabled people cannot access them by putting up fences in front of these memorials. The few remaining veterans from World War II in wheelchairs, they can't get near their memorial. Now, that violates both the ADA and also other codes. And frankly, since he is targeting the elderly, or whoever in the administration has made this dumb decision, they are committing elder abuse and they are subject to a lawsuit. Now, that I'm not a lawyer, of course, is the fact that I'm not going to follow this up. But there are many lawyers out there who could sue the government for closing down these memorials on that basis. By the way, if you have AOL and you're living in the Bay Area, I have it, and my CIAOL is down right now. I can't get it up. It says mail is not available. So I guess the CIAOL mail that I get and send during shows will come to a conclusion. 855-407-282. Also, requests from Train Tracks. Which family stories do you want to hear the most? We played Dead Man's Pants in Hour 1. Which, if you missed it, you can read it yourself in a bookstore. I am not Abby Hoffman. I'm not going to tell you to go steal this book. I'm going to tell you to go read the book and buy it. There's another pet peeve of mine are the cheap people in bookstores today. I remember in my day, you weren't allowed to thumb magazines in a candy store. Little Mr. Schwartz would stand there with a beady eye, and if you went in, let's say you wanted to look at a baseball magazine, all you had to do was touch it, he made you buy it. Because he knew that once you soiled the magazine with your thumb, nobody would buy it. You'd rifle through it until you got one that was not thumbed. He would look at you, get out of here, you're going to buy it or get out of here. Now you go with Barnes & Noble, they sit there all day long, they live for nothing. They don't even buy a piece of sponge cake. They read 20 magazines, 14 newspapers, and 3 books, and they walk out buying nothing. Have you seen this? And you wonder why Borders went out of business. And you wonder why my motto is Borders, Language, and Culture. It's not about the bookstore chain. No, siree. No, siree, Bob. Don't people have any shame? That's one of my pet peeves is reading for free in bookstores. When did that come in? When did that become a norm in America? That you could read every magazine and buy nothing? How does a bookstore survive? How is it possible? Well, they're not surviving. Yeah, another pet peeve are the farmers markets and the cheap liberals who eat for free. I get crazy. They go from immigrant to immigrant to immigrant. May I have one of the... And they'll talk to the Emmy. They'll talk for 10 minutes and buy nothing. That's a good peach. And how's that plum? And they'll eat for free. You see them, the bag ladies, the Obama voters. They go from stall to stall to stall, eating for free from these poor people. It gets me furious. I'm the kind of fool who stands next to him and starts to say things like, why don't you buy something, lady? What are you taking up the man's time for? What do you think, he's here to talk to you? They have no shame. One thing I'll tell you, they have no shame whatsoever. They graze from poor immigrant fruit peddler to the next poor immigrant fruit peddler. One last pet peeve of the Savage Nation this evening. You ready for it? All-you-can-eat buffets. That's why the poor Indians are eaten to death. Like locusts here. I've never saw anything like it. There's an Indian buffet I go to. Off and on, I have a love-hate relationship with all restaurants. In particular, I have a love-hate with this one because sometimes the chicken is cold, sometimes it's hot, and it's always skimpy, and they're always on the edge. They wait for you to come until they throw a piece of chicken in the oven. I don't like that kind of buffet where you go and there's like a scrawny chicken leg left on the bottom of the bin or the vegetable. When you start hearing metal, stainless steel on the spoon, you know you're in a bad all-you-can-eat job. When the spoon is already striking stainless steel, you've struck out, buddy. Let me tell you. So I go in, and you see people all-you-can-eat. The bones pile up. It looks like a pterodactyl attacked a rabbit wren. The bones are like 6 inches high of the leg. And the poor Indian standing there with the benign smile, the benevolent face, bowing at them as they leave. Oh, thank you very much. Oh, thank you very much. $8.95. How do they stay in business? I feel bad for them. I often pay them more than my bill because I feel so bad for them. That's why I don't go there. I don't like to feel bad in a restaurant. Well, as far as Italian restaurants, I don't go to them anymore. They're overrated. The food is horrible, fattening. I eat too much, drink too much, mild brioche. That's the key. I don't use brioche. So I don't go to North Beach anymore. I don't go to Italian restaurants anymore. And by and large, I don't. What it is what it is. The world is changing. So do you have a problem with my motto of Borders, Language, and Culture? Because as I announced in the last hour, when my show moves, God willing, come January, to 3 to 6 p.m. East Coast time and noon to 3 p.m. West Coast time come January, and I take over Sean Hannity's slot on all Cumulus stations, and I give old, what's his name, Hey Abbott? Lou Costello a run for his money. When I give old Lou a run for his money, when I finally have stations in his time slot, I'm going to make some announcements in early January in the first shows that I think are going to shake up the political landscape. I can't tell you what they are tonight, but I'm going to make them. I can't tell you what they are tonight. Now, let me read you an email that I, Michael Savage, received today from a friend, well, a distant associate of mine. He's a wonderful man. And it's from a military veteran. And it's to Senator Patty Murray and Senator Maria Cantwell in Washington State. Dear Senators, it says, I have tried to live by the rules my entire life. My father was a command sergeant major, U.S. Army, who died of combat-related stresses shortly after his retirement. It was he who instilled in me those virtues he felt important, honesty, duty, patriotism, and obeying the laws of God and of our various governments. I have served my country, paid my taxes, worked hard, volunteered, and donated my fair share of money, time, and artifacts. Today, as I approach my 79th birthday, he writes, I am heartbroken when I look at my country and my government.
I shall only point out a very few things abysmally wrong with which you can multiply by a thousandfold. I have calculated that all the money I have paid in income taxes my entire life cannot even keep the Senate barbershop open for 1 year. Only heaven and a few tight-lipped actuarial types know what the Senate dining room costs the taxpayers. So please enjoy your haircuts and meals on us. Last year, the president spent an estimated $1.4 billion on himself and his family. Let me repeat that. Last year, President Obama spent an estimated $1.4 billion, capital B, on himself and his family. The vice president spends millions on hotels. They have had 8 vacations so far this year. And our House of Representatives and Senate have become America's answer to the Saudi royal family. You have become the perfumed princes and princesses of our country in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, you voted in the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, a bill which no more than a handful of senators or representatives read more than several paragraphs, crammed it down our throats, and then promptly exempted yourselves from it, substituting your own taxpayer-subsidized golden health care insurance. You live exceedingly well, senators. You eat and drink as well as the one percenters, consistently vote yourself perks and pay raises while making 3.5 times the average U.S. individual income, and give up nothing while you, as well as the president and Veep, ask us to sacrifice due to sequestration, for which, of course, you plan to blame the Republicans anyway. You understand very well the only two rules you need to know. One, how to get elected, and two, how to get reelected. And you do this with the aid of an eagerly willing and partisan press, speeches permeated with a certain economy of truth, and by buying the votes of the greedy, the ill-informed and uneducated citizens, and non-citizens too, many of whom do vote, who are looking for a handout rather than a job. Your so-called safety net, senators, has become a hammock for the lazy. And what is now about 49 or 50 million on food stamps, pretty much all Democrat voters, and the program is absolutely rife with fraud with absolutely no congressional oversight. I would offer that you are not entirely to blame. What changed you is the seductive environment of power in which you have immersed yourselves. And I'll pause right here, because I know there's a limit to how much anyone can listen to such heartfelt, brilliant, insightful writing. And it is from a military veteran at age 79 who has seen what the cesspool has become called the United States government. And if you think this is anti-government, you're right. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
Extra, extra, hear all about it. French far-right victory stirs fear among mainstream parties. So the mainstream corrupt parties in France are shaking in their croissants because of a decisive victory by the FN, the National Front, in an election in a small town in the sleepy hinterland of France's Côte d'Azur. And it is led by Marine Le Pen. She is a conservative. And it is a surge by the populist right in European elections, not only in France. And that is shaking the corrupt ministers to their core. That's exactly what's going on in the United States of America. Both parties are afraid of the nationalist intonations, for example, of Rand Paul, even though he never mentions borders, language, and culture, or of Ted Cruz, who never mentions borders, language, and culture. But they're smearing the opposition in America as they're smearing the opposition in France, calling them every name under the sun. But the left-wingers who have seized power in America should be forewarned that the American people know who they are, detest them for what they've done to the country, hate the welfare state, despise the flood of illegal immigrants flooding into the country from third world nations, hate the degeneracy that is being spewed into our children's heads, oppose gun control, oppose high taxes, oppose so many different things, that there's a definite growing movement in America under the surface, a grassroots movement, to use a left-wing phrase, that is bubbling up from the people themselves. And that is
based upon the center-right politics of most American people. I know you don't believe it, but that's what every poll shows. The people hate the crime, they hate the immigration, they hate the welfare, they hate the high taxes, they hate the smearing of their culture, not only in France, but in America. And that's why I tell you that there's room in America for a nationalist party, and I will have a big announcement to make when my show moves to primetime drive time in January. I can't tell you any more about it right now. WABC, Paul, welcome to the program. What's the topic?
Hey, how are you tonight? I was going to say thank you very much for all you do. You're doing the best job out there, I believe, and you're very, very wise in what your information is being released to people. I was going to say the borders, languages, and cultures topic. Our borders are serving more people than McDonald's in this country, and the languages are I have a problem with as far as the English language. That's being pretty much stepped on as far as, you know, having it.
Well, yeah, but my motto, if I were to run a political party, which I am not doing, it would be based upon this motto, borders, language, and culture. That would be the flag, that would be the banner, that would be the motto of the party. I don't care whether Obama's offering Obamacare in 150 different languages. It just shows you who he is and what he's doing to the country. That's why we need the unifying language called English. We don't need 150 languages. That's the Tower of Babel.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. So what's wrong with one language to unify a people? Obama knows what he's doing. Fracture the people. Break them apart. Turn everyone against everyone. Hire translators for 150 languages to give them Obamacare, which they're not even entitled to.
And as far as the cultures go, our, you know, the cultures that founded this country are being snuffed out to the cultures that are coming in.
Well, okay, when I say borders, that's pretty obvious what I mean by borders. It doesn't mean that Obama's obeying the law. He isn't. He's breaking law wherever he can. He broke the law by permitting the National Mall to be occupied by illegal aliens. He broke the law by violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by chaining up the two war memorials. So the fact of the matter is, borders are what they are, what they always have been. Not when this left-wing maniac took over the country and wants to erase the borders doesn't mean that they've been erased. Okay, so we know what the borders are. They can be restored with a strong political party. Language, it's English. That's the official language. Learn it or get out. That's all. It's that simple. You want to speak another language? Speak it at home. But the language of the land, the language of business, the language of government is English, period. And if you're too lazy to learn it, then you're not entitled to any benefits. And as far as culture goes, it's a very clear issue, culture. What do I mean by culture? And many people challenge me and say, what do you mean by culture? I thought long and hard about this over the weekend. The culture of America is built upon the Judeo-Christian virtues and values that built this nation. You could say it means the work ethic, and it does. That's part of the culture. Borders, language, and culture. What is the culture? The Judeo-Christian ethic that built the nation. The Judeo-Christian ethic that built the nation. How hard is that to understand? Does that mean there's no room for Buddhism? No. Of course it doesn't mean that. Does it mean there's no room for Hinduism or Islam or Zoroastrianism or Assyrians or any other religion that may be valid in America? No, no one said that. But the core value of our culture, the core values of our culture are based upon the Judeo-Christian values that most sane people grew up with. Now, the question is, are these values translatable to other religions? Absolutely. Are they restrictive and exclusive? No, they're not actually. They're universal values. The Judeo-Christian values that I'm referring to, break them down to the Ten Commandments. Now, show me which commandment violates any of America's laws. Show me which of the Ten Commandments is an affront to you. Name one. Well, to a liberal, all ten of them are an affront. Thou shalt not steal, that's offensive. Thou shalt not, thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that. Virtually every commandment is an affront to the Democrats running this country today. But not to me and not to you. So I stand by my statement, boy.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. We're talking about, how about a nightcap together? A verbal nightcap. Maybe that's what I should do every night. You know, when I move to a day part, it's going to be, actually will be a different show. I say it won't be, but it will be. It's a different pace at night. People are, you know, they're tired. If they've listened to talk radio on and off all day, they've heard all the crap they can take. They don't want to hear any more about sequester and the shutdown and this and the that. They don't want to hear about it at all anymore, by the way. They're sick of it. You know why? Life goes on. Not one service has been interrupted. The only service that have been interrupted are the ones that are meant to punish people. That's your president at work, your kind-hearted, compassionate president. And as I say, and if you remember nothing from tonight's show, and spread it out on your social networks, by barricading the World War II Memorial and by barricading the Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., the president or his minions have violated the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, and they are committing elder abuse. Send it out on your social networks. Use a Savage Said line tonight because it's 100% true. Now, I realize many people don't even know what I'm talking about because it didn't come to them from the mainstream government press. But nevertheless, what I say happens to be true. So what requests do you have tonight from my remarkable legacy, Train Tracks, Family Stories for the Holidays, now out in paperback? It's cheap. It's just the pictures are interesting. You know, I'm looking at myself over the years in the black and whites. It's actually chilling. It's like the portrait of Dorian Gray in reverse in some ways, because there I am as a swarthy young man, long hair, Tammy O'Shanter on a ship. No, let's go back. There I am as a young boy, okay, lifting weights, my 15-year-old self trying to look tough during my weightlifting phase. Not a bad-looking kid. Rifle scarred. Jamaica High School Championship rifle. Okay, next. There I am in the Fiji Islands with a headband looking like Charles Manson, plant collector. With a young child, my young child. You see yourself. Then next, I got my job through the New York Times. My face appeared in every subway station in New York, 1967. Smiling, young man, life ahead of him. Psych experiments, Reed College, 1966, working with rats in a box. Years later, Kew Gardens, London, one of the hundreds of my ethnobotanical specimens in the permanent collection. Michael Savage, plant collector. All right, now you're moving on now. I'm looking at my Arcadia, Honolulu to Vancouver. Father and daughter, father and son at the gun range, 1980s. Mama Savage in the Little Queen's Kitchen where she cooked for an army, 1970s. I love that picture. I have it on my bureau. Maybe I'm a mama's boy. I love my mother. I miss her. I really do. But there she was, smiling away. Little four-burner electric stove. A little Pullman kitchen. She made better food on those four burners than you get in a fake pasta joint today in San Francisco. They go to cooking school, burners, special burners, 12 million BTUs, special instruments and pots. You can puke from the food. Tasteless. How'd she cook like that? I don't understand it. A four-burner stove with electric grids, with aluminum foil on it to protect the stove. Next picture, in one of my home studios, 2002, all my hair was black, my beard was black. Now we move to the last picture in the book, the night we all lost, Election Eve 2008, me dejected on a couch with my dog Teddy at my feet. The beard is half gray, the hair is half gone, and the other hair is gray. What a change from 02 to 08 was the turning point in my life. I see the pictures, I don't like this. I think I'm going to throw the book. I don't want to look at these pictures, it's eerie. It's freaky. So without further ado now, one of the cheerful stories from Michael Savage's Train Tracks, now out in your local bookstore. This one is another favorite for all the pessimists. It's about when the Leatherman gets cancer. Listen, the story I'm going to tell you occurred when I was a young man. First a kid and then a young man. And it was about a man who grew up as one of my father's best friends in a very poor neighborhood in New York City. They were immigrants together. Their parents came over. They came over, I think, maybe on the same boat, or they met each other in the slums of New York. And they both had a very tough life, and they worked their way up little by little, as the immigrants have to do and as they struggle in the society. And this man went into a business that took off at a certain point like a rocket. He hit a fad in a certain business, and he started to make a great deal of money, and he moved way beyond our family. While we lived in an attached house in Queens, New York, an attached brick house, he had the money to move his family to a detached house. Remember how important that distinction was in those days. It's like the Buick LeSabre as opposed to the Buick Roadmaster. Well, God forbid you a Rockefeller, you bought a Cadillac, if you can imagine. That's how people used to grade themselves in those days, by their status, cars and houses.
I don't suppose it's much different today. It just isn't as easy to figure out in some regard, not on the road anyway. Anyway, so he moved to this detached house in Roslyn, New York. And it was a beautiful house. It had its own garden all around it. We only had a little strip of grass in the backyard, a little teeny one in the front. And the carpet was wall-to-wall, and it was pink. And he was a big cigar smoker. And we go over and visit, and I had a very good time. He would gloat, you know, with the cigar and lord it over my father. And we'd leave. My father never said anything against him. But, you know, I could see in his eyes that he was in his, you know, he was a little, let's say lost that little battle at that time. You know how men are. I mean, men are competitive. Even if they love their friend, if their friend does better than them, there's a degree of envy in every human being. It's just one of the cardinal sins. As years went on, the man's business continued to thrive. And then I left home. I moved away from New York City. I went and did my thing collecting plants, working for my graduate degrees. Thousands of miles away. I was living 6,000 miles away, then 9,000 miles away in the Fiji Islands. And lo and behold, on one of my trips back to New York when I was already a father myself, I had heard that this man's business had collapsed entirely. The fad that he had rode like a wave had died. Women were no longer buying that particular product. And the man who had a chain of successful wholesale stores lost everything. He lost everything, and it was so fast that he wound up living where he started, on the Lower East Side of New York, in a poor relative's apartment with his wife and the relative's family, back where he started in a one-room apartment. And that's where I come in. I come back from one of my trips to the Fiji Islands. I'm a young man in my, I don't know how old I must have been. I don't remember, 25, 30. I don't remember what age I was already anymore. And there he was, sitting in my father's house, and I loved this man. I loved him like another father. I loved all my father's friends. And you know how it is when you're a kid in a very close-knit community. You tend to love the people like they're your own, you know. We all grew up so closely together. There was never a bad word between him and my father, man. He's sitting there shrunken up in a chair in my living room where he had lost everything, and he looks up at me, still smoking a cigar, and he was shrunken in the chair. And he looks up at me in his eyes and he says, Michael, look what happened to me. Look what happened to me. And his eyes were like wandering left and right. He didn't understand what happened to him. And he said, I'd rather I have cancer than what God did to me. And lo and behold, I soon left New York. I went back to do what I did, which is collecting plants. And I heard that 2 years later he died from one of the most rapidly invasive forms of brain cancer. Be careful what you say. God hears the truth, but waits.
Savage.
It's a chilling story, and every word of it is true. I don't even like telling it, but that is in Train Tracks. You know, tragic comedy. It's part of life. It happens. Maybe you don't hear about these things today. I don't know, but that is in the book. And it was a true story. I'll never forget it. Now, I can see his eyes to this day looking up at me saying, I wish that I, you know what he said. I don't even want to repeat it. So that's why I wrote it. It's not all, you know, life is, you know, up and down. Life's got happy moments and sad moments and tragic moments and joyful moments. And don't believe anyone else. I mean, the psychiatric establishment would have you believe you're supposed to be happy all the time. That's crazy. No one believes that. Nobody believes that. And if you keep trying for that happiness, all you can do is frustrate yourself and wind up on drugs. And that's why you shouldn't keep trying for it. Stop seeking happiness and you may find it here and there. That would be my advice. All right, the phone number is 855-407-2822. That's it for Nostalgia and Memory Lane on the program tonight. It's one story each half hour for the rest of the week from my new book, Train Tracks, available in paperback, in bookstores, everywhere. I like that picture of Teddy. Looks like a little lion. He does look like a lion. At night when Teddy's in bed with me, I look at him, he looks at me, and I repeat what women say about him. And if I'm walking him, what kind of dog is that? You know, they're smart dogs. It depends upon my mood and what kind of woman it is upon my answer. Either I'll say he's a poodle if I think the person's nice and sincere. Or if they're just being what my dad would call a BB, which is a phrase I can't repeat on the show. I have other names for what kind of dog he is, one of which is a Leo poo. What's a Leo poo? Well, lady, a Leo poo is a mixture between a mini lion and a mini poodle. Really? Yes. a special breed from the Serengeti, a Leo poo. Teddy gets a kick out of that one. But he's a poodle with a full head of full hair, so he looks like a lion. Cute little guy. God, he's my best friend. I ask him what movies he likes to watch on TV at night, and he's indifferent to it. I think he likes boxing matches, but I can't tell. He's on his back with his feet up by that point. He's in dreamland. You know, what I like about dogs is they cry at night while they sleep. They're so much like us. It's amazing. How can they cry? What are they thinking about? You didn't give them a bone? You didn't give them a greenie? You left them alone and went out? What else could they be thinking about? They're not worrying about death. They're not worrying about their legacy. They're not worrying if they were disrespected in an Italian restaurant. They're not worrying, you know, and what could they be crying about? It's basic. How about another cheerful story I just found, the death of Snowy, another pet story. I think I better cheer the audience up. I said I wouldn't do another one, but guys, when I come back, I think we should close the show tonight with When Pasta Was Spaghetti, because I need to leave them happy. I can't leave the people sad. I don't want to be responsible for any suicides tonight. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So Obama or his minions, we can't blame him for everything, just most everything. After all, he's behind closing down the veterans' memorials. Not only did they close them down, but now they've reinforced the fencing. And I got to reiterate what I said earlier. I don't care whether you're a Democrat or Republican. He is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act and committing elder abuse by locking out handicapped people from their memorials. Period. End of story. And never forget that. It shows you how mean these people are. They're mean. How could you believe liberals are kind? Where did the words liberal and kind ever get unified? How is that possible? The conservatives are the kind people in America. We are the kind people. We are the ones who pay everyone's bill. The liberals are the ones who take from us and give it to those who don't deserve it. They're not robbing from the rich to give to the poor. They're robbing from the rich. Are they? No. They're robbing from the middle class to give to the rich. You don't want to hear it. You hear what happened when a welfare glitch hit? You didn't hear about this today, what they did? Black Friday comes early as computer glitches cause welfare benefits frenzy. In some Walmart stores, customers emptied shelves like it was Black Friday, while in others, no one could buy anything, all thanks to a weekend of glitches with the nation's welfare system. You want to hear what happened? Problems involving the EBT cards, electronic benefits transfer cards, which are the government handouts to poor voters to make them vote for Obama, which are administered by states with the help of private companies, plagued at least 17 states. So what happened? The welfare recipients couldn't use their cards in some cases, but in certain stores, the cards registered no spending limits. So what did the welfare leeches do? They have an electronics benefit transfer card. The card registers no spending limits. The welfare leeches go crazy. And in a mob scene that left employees rattled, they went through the store cleaning off the shelves. It wasn't about food. They took as much as they could get for nothing. When the order was restored in the stores and the cards began reading properly, it became clear that some welfare leeches were out to take advantage of the taxpayer-funded program. One welfare leech had $700 worth of merchandise in her cart and an EBT card with a balance of just 49 cents. You hear? This is your poor and your downtrodden that you're now carrying on your back. That's what you're carrying on your back. That's why I say it's crazy. The country's out of control. And it's all happening on purpose, by the way. It's happening on purpose. What do you mean EBT card? How can you give a person who doesn't work an EBT card? That's not going to be rife with fraud? All right, whatever. Connecticut, WABC is a call. We got a caller from Connecticut up in Connecticut on WABC. Jane, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Good morning. Good evening, actually. I'm calling from Connecticut, and I just wanted to tell you that the letter that you read from the 79-year-old gentleman absolutely blew me away. Everything he said was right on. And I would love...
I know it's hard to believe that anybody could be so articulate and see it for what it really is. A man who's given so much to the country, and that's why I think I will, you know, read the letter again this week, where he says your so-called safety net has become a hammock for the lazy. And what it is now, 49 or 50 million on food stamps, pretty much all Democrat voters, and the program is absolutely rife with fraud and absolutely no congressional oversight. I would offer that you are not entirely to blame. What changed you is the seductive environment of power in which you have immersed yourselves. That's 100% true, isn't it?
Absolutely. 100% true.
All right. Well, thank you for being a new listener. I think to cheer people up and not sound like a downer tonight, I'd like to play another cut from my book, Train Tracks, out in paperback and bookstores everywhere. My Family Stories, that is my signature. We'll play When Pasta Was Spaghetti. We're playing Italian music because I have a treat for you. I found the poem When Pasta Was Spaghetti in my archives. It was written, let's see, Michael Savage, August 1985, written in a lightning storm at 40,000 feet over Cheyenne, Wyoming, when I thought the plane was going to crash. I wrote When Pasta Was Spaghetti. So here it is, whether you like it or not, all right? So you liberals get ready to sneer, and you sane people get ready to enjoy it because it's a wonderful poem. So play the music again. Go ahead. They got the mood. We got the mood set up. It's called When Pasta Was Spaghetti, and try to imagine it, all right? The hairy forearms of New York serve you your coffee with a turning gesture, an offering that says drink, eat, enjoy. The wiry Italian in Vincent's clam bar, the one behind the greased over register, the young kid connected who receives his deference from the spaghetti cook older than his gangster father, the spaghetti cook who looks like an old-fashioned doctor from the Bronx with clipped mustache. He actually pulls some noodles out of the pot and eats them as they cook, looking to the grimy ceiling for his tender answer. Well, they used to call it spaghetti. Now it's pasta at $10 a plate. The smoky windows of Romeo's Spaghetti now offers radios and knickknacks. It was 50 cents a plate then. In neon letters that you couldn't miss, even through a fog over window on a cold winter's eve, there was life. Marinara sauce that smacked to the sea. Noodles as long as your young arm. Meatballs as fluffy as your dream of them. Bread on the table you'd eat against your parents' admonitions that the meal was coming, the meal was coming. And men, some burly with black hairy forearms whose smiles scared you, and little skinny guys with the look of murder on their faces, and people who slurped their spaghetti straight to their mouths from the plate, one motion like Chinese shoveling rice at mouth with clicking sticks. That was gusto before it became a beer ad. That was taste before it became a synonym for fashion. That was spaghetti before it became pasta. Play the music, basta. Very good. I'll do that for private readings for $100,000 for my favorite charity, which is the Poor Revere Society. You want me at your...
Well, that was When Pasta Was Spaghetti. I think one of my most cheerful stories, or shall I say poems, in this case, in Train Tracks, Family Stories for the Holidays, that even the New Yorker quotes me as a marvelous storyteller. For those of you who are afraid to buy the book, you could buy the book and put it in a plain brown wrapper, but I guarantee you that you won't be able to put it down. Well, that's it for this hour on the Savage Nation. Up and down, a mellow evening in some ways, and tragic in others. The take-home message is that Obama and his minions are violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, the ADA, and committing elder abuse by locking World War II veterans in wheelchairs and veterans from Vietnam out of their memorials. How's that for compassionate liberalism?
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-7282. Savage. Warning, the Savage Nation contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised. And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, the Savage Nation. And here he is, Michael Savage.
Welcome. Another depressing Monday, but not depressing on the Savage Nation because you've made it to the third hour on October 14th, 2013. So what's in the news? Well, you've all got your favorite sites. Mine is michaelsavage.com, home of borders, language, and culture. Top right, Savage calls for answers over missing nukes. We're asking a simple question. Why'd you fire the head of the nuclear command? And where'd the nukes go? Play the nuclear game. Where are they? Nobody knows. Round and round it goes. Obama plays sleight of hand with our nukes. And where they go, nobody knows. Meanwhile, your government has set up new barricades that are wired together to block the World War II memorial to spite World War II veterans. This is Barack Hussein Obama, clear as a bell. The king has no clothes. It cost them more money to set up the barricades than it would have to let people look at the memorial. What a spiteful man he is. On the top left, see a picture of Michael Savage with his dog Teddy in a, well, shall I say, a British sports car from 1970. Savage moving through drive time coming January 1st, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern, 12 to 3 Western. That's right, it's a big story. It's a big story. Savage is number one in digital radio rankings again. Bungling bureaucrats dole out billions in tax credits to illegal aliens. That's your government at work. Meanwhile, the holy war in Harlem goes on. Pastors want Al Sharptong out. Huh? How could that be? Afghan in uniform shoots U.S. soldiers in back. Huh? Al-Qaeda surges back in Iraq. Whoa. This is a sad story. A southern snowstorm, a freak South Dakota snowstorm, dumped 4 feet of snow on cattle ranches and killed 100,000 cows. 100,000 cattle killed, I guess because of global warming. We had a freak South Dakota ice storm. Well, ask Al Gore. He would know. He's the expert on that. Very sad. An American who fought with Syrian rebels was arrested. Looks like a Marxist to me. The scraggly beard and the long hair. We shall, really? All over again? But now they're donning a headscarf. Interesting. What's his name? Let's see. An Orange County, Sinvingo Gwen. Oh! An Orange County man who fought with Syrian rebels against the Assad regime was arrested as he tried to leave the US with a fake passport. 24-year-old Sinvingo Gwen of Garden Grove, also known as Hassan Abu Omar Ghanom. Wow! So now some Vietnamese are joining Al-Qaeda. Woo! Gee, America has an awful lot of people who hate it. That's terrible. That's really awful. Who's next? Who knows? Round and round it goes. Who can Obama radicalize? Nobody knows. Meanwhile, the government shutdown goes on, the shutdown game, on and on and on. Yeah, right, sure. I say close her down, keep her down, fire 10% of the workforce. And you know what? Why not pull an Argentina on the world? They did it a few times. It seems they're still there. Why don't we just tell the Chinese to go pound sand? We're not paying you. What do you think might happen? Nah, I'm just kidding. Come on. I don't mean that. Nah. And Obama here is violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by not permitting these memorials to be accessible to the handicapped. Now, you can also add to that and say he's committing elder abuse by locking old men away from their memorials, couldn't you? But does it not matter to you? That's why I'm saying you're burned out. I know that. I know this is not a big issue for most people because most of us are not World War II vets. We're not Vietnam veterans. Our problems with Obama are really about his denigration of America the Great, high taxes, immigration, energy policy, gun control, and gay marriage. I told you this last week, and I asked you what are your grievances. But I feel that hopping on grievances is not enough of a radio show. I listen to it off and on all day long, and I turn it off. I can't listen to it anymore. And I know as much about it as anyone in the country. It's awful. It's going to get worse. And so what I've done for you today is I put together some wonderful family stories that are published in my newly released book, Family Stories for the Holidays, Train Tracks by Michael Savage, which just happens to be out, yes, in paperback, I'm very proud to tell you. All of the stories that you've come to love, Dead Man's Pants, Love by the Sewer Treatment Plant, The Diet of a Young Savage, Louie and the Monkey, Savage's Crazy Friend, Woodchuck Bill, Two Finger Teacher, First Autopsy, Half Man and Half Woman, The Yawn Man Gets Cancer, Fat Al's Tuna, First Dead Body, Shady Podiatrist and the Jaguar, Herbie the Schlub and Other Memories. They're all in paperback in Train Tracks, and I can take requests for them after I do the news headlines, which I'm going to do. I'm going to do news headlines, and I'm going to play some of these songs for you.
not so much as a filibuster, but as a just a break from it all. Because I myself have had all I can take. Obama is perhaps not only the most divisive president looking to cause a civil war, he's certainly provoking as much unrest as he can in America and around the world. That's a given. You don't have to be blind to see what he's doing. Do you have to be blind to see what the man is doing? But now to attack veterans like this and to realize he's alienating all of the veterans and their families in the country, you got to say why. Who's advising him? Well, I don't know who's advising him. I have no idea why they would do a thing like this. So you're hearing about shutdown, slowdown, like the world's coming to an end. And yet there are 800,000 federal employees who are not furloughed and will not be paid, right? But there are non-essential federal workers. For example, national parks. Now, why would Obama set up new barricades and wire them in front of the World War II and Vietnam veterans memorials when it costs more money to set up the barriers than to leave them open to the public? Who are the other non-essential workers? Well, plenty of them. Superfund cleanup, they're furloughed. Food inspectors are furloughed. The panda cam at the National Zoo is furloughed. Food programs are furloughed. Now, school lunches, though, for low-income students are not affected. Food stamps were not affected. But certain other programs were cut back, which, of course, we don't need. The WIC program. How many programs can we, the taxpayer, afford? You know, which leads to the next question. There is a revolution emerging in Europe. Far-right parties are rising throughout Europe. Now, this is an interesting phenomenon. In France, the Le Pen party under the woman, Marie Le Pen, who is the daughter of, well, obviously her father. Her father was tied to World War II era right-wing talk in France, which had a tinge of anti-Semitism in it. The daughter has no such tinge. She's simply a nationalist and an anti-immigration activist. She said France can no longer afford all of this flood of immigrants, particularly Muslims, who frankly to her are eating them alive and destroying their culture. So her party is surging in France. Why is the far-right non-racist rising in Europe, while in America, anyone who dares stand up to this communist dictatorship in America, this divisive communist dictatorship that has emerged in America in the government media complex, smeared? And where is the right wing in America? You can't say, for example, that by any means is Rand Paul a right winger. He's a libertarian. You can smear Ted Cruz all you want, and I won't do it. He's not a right winger. He never mentions borders, language, and culture. So where is America's right-wing movement? The answer is we don't know. But I can guarantee you something right now, and I'm going to have more on this. I can't even hint at it right now, but I'm going to hint at it right now. When my show moves to drive time, 3 to 6 p.m. Eastern and 12 to 3 p.m. Pacific time beginning January 1st, I'm going to have a little more news for you about a true nationalist party in the United States of America. I may have a lot more news for you. So stay tuned, because don't assume this is just going to be an entertainment vehicle. No, it won't be. My stethoscope is about as accurate as anyone's political stethoscope in this country. And this country has long been a center-right country. The problem is that Obama has seized the government, and with the help from his leftist friends, you would think they are the mainstream. They are not the mainstream. They're a small group of far-left, out of the mainstream radicals who have seized the country. That is why they're firing generals. That is why they're spitting in the eye of World War II veterans and Vietnam veterans. That is why they're calling anybody who disagrees with them names, etc., etc., etc. I am going to tell you this. If a candidate who was articulate emerged for the 2016 presidential election who could articulate my message, borders, language, and culture, and stay on message, by the way, and not let anyone distract him or her. If anyone had the ability to do that, I don't say they would win. I would say they'd pull 12% of the popular vote, which would be enough to destroy the Republican Party forever. And certain things are better off destroyed, by the way, than allowed to die on their own accord. Because as far as I can tell, the Republicans cannot win the next election. See, I didn't mean to get into politics. They've already lost it. They've thrown it to Hillary Clinton. It's a given. The power structure on Wall Street and the international bankers have decided that Hillary will be the next president. The Republicans are just going through the paces, as you can see.
Ted Cruz can't win. Alan West, who I admire enormously, could never win for obvious reasons. Rand Paul can't win. But I can guarantee you that anyone who comes across with my message of borders, language, and culture and sticks to it from the beginning to the end of his campaign or her campaign would pull 12 to 18% of the popular vote and fracture the Republican Party and destroy them once and for all. And that would allow a new nationalist party to emerge in its place. Out with the old, in with the new. For Obama to be doing what he's doing and get away with it without an actual riot occurring is a miracle to me. I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Well, I'm going to give you some news headlines. Let's go to the best website for news, and that's the Drudge Report. Headline, unions poised to win delay of Obamacare tax and budget deal. You hear this? Do you have any idea how many of Obama's cronies are exempt from Obamacare? I read you the list last week. Anybody who can lobby Obama and bring a satchel of M&Ms to him can be exempt from the Health Care Act. People with household income who is low, they don't have to file a federal income tax return, you're exempt. People who are part of a federally recognized tribe, you're exempt. People who are in jail or prison, you're exempt. People who are currently uninsured for less than 3 months of the year, you're exempt. People who are a member of a recognized health care sharing ministry, whatever that means, you're exempt. There are many other people who are exempt. Would you like to hear them? People who experience a hardship can claim an exemption. Now, what's a hardship? Whatever a mean-faced, clipped-haired bureaucrat says is a hardship, is a hardship. If you had a close family member die recently, even if you're worth $1 billion and you're Warren Buffett, that's considered a hardship. If you wear suits made of out of vicuna fur, but you had a family member die recently, that's a hardship. You're exempt. I'm not making any of this up. It's a scandal-ridden program from day one, and that's who's exempt. What else is in the Drudge Report? NSA collecting contacts from 500,000 buddy lists each day. Hey, youngsters. Hey, you fools who elected that cool guy, Obama. You're paying for everyone else's health care, you young idiots. And your buddy lists are now going to some unnamed, unknown fascist sitting in a dark room somewhere collecting data. I'll take a request right now at 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Here are questions for the Savage Nation. The U.S. Army has defined a Christian ministry known as the American Family Association as a domestic hate group because they don't like homosexuals. You heard me. I told you the day would come. I told you what would happen. The U.S. Army has defined a Christian ministry as a domestic hate group, along with the Ku Klux Klan and the American Nazi Party, the neo-Nazis, and the Black Panthers. That's right. They have turned a mainstream Christian ministry into a hate group. You are now living in a madhouse under Barack Hussein Obama, who is trying to, well, do I have to say again over and over every day the same thing? I'm not going to say it. I made my point over and over again. I'll take requests. Phone number is 855-400-7282. Let's go to a caller on WHO.
It's good talking to you, Michael Savage. Yeah, the name is House Johnson.
Sorry I didn't pronounce it properly. Are you listening live in Honolulu?
Well, no. This is only on the Internet.
Oh, okay. So you're listening on W Internet. I get it.
Right, yeah, Internet. But your story about Dead Man's Pants, that's quite phenomenal. When you come out with your show at 6, I'm going, okay, everything stops. Savage is on the radio. And man,
we... that night. So you live in Hawaii, do you, House?
Honolulu, Hawaii, Oahu.
You used to... where, can I ask where? I used to live there. I'm just curious. What part of town?
The McCulley area.
Oh, McCulley Chop Suey. Is it still up there on Y&I Drive?
Right there, King and McCulley.
You see? My mind still works. You want to hear something funny, House? This is interesting. I was reminiscing the other day about my first months in Hawaii, and I went to that very Chop Suey place with some friends from the college. And they served food, you know, Chinese food. And in the soup, there was some white globules, which I thought was fat. And I wouldn't eat it. I said to him, why would they serve soup with globules of white fat in it? And my friends, being from California, snickered at me because they knew more than I did about everything.
Right.
And they said, that's not fat. They said, that's a stuff called tofu.
Yes.
So that was my introduction to the anti-fat called tofu. And it was right in that restaurant house, I swear to you.
Michael Savage, it's still there. The building is still kept with little green gas lights around the outside. Okay.
House, that is so nice to hear that you like the show. Do you mainly like the stories? Is that what you like?
Hell no. We listen to Michael Savage. I mean, the stuff you come up with, how you did on Obama. But, Savage, you already gave your answer to what we're getting ready to turn into, which is Honolulu, okay? Oahu. Savage, here the question is, why did you... I don't know if you can remember it, but why did you say you left Hawaii with your family or to be start a family? Why did
I left Hawaii because of the, I'm going to tell you like it is, you know, I tend not to hold things back. My little boy was entering the first grade, and being a Caucasian boy, he was picked on a daily basis by the lovely, kind third worlders and the indigenous folks who hated Howleys.
Yep.
And I made a decision I would not subject my son to racism by putting him to go. See, I didn't have the money to send him to a private school like Obama went to.
Right, right.
So I was too poor to send him to a private school, and I didn't want him to be having to face everyday racism that exists in Hawaii. I mean, I know it exists, and it must be taught a lot toward black people, too. Let's be clear.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that the black people are not treated very well locally in Hawaii, because I had a friend, Harold, who owned a Thai restaurant there, who was a Vietnam vet, came back, married a Thai woman, came back, and opened up a Thai restaurant in downtown Honolulu, which, by the way, was the best Thai food I ever had in my life. I've never been able to find food as good ever since. It's all been watered down in America into some sugar broth. I can't even eat it. But Harold told me all the stories about a black man in Honolulu at the time. He just, you know, he just lived it. He said the heck with him. He didn't care. He didn't let him bother him. But he faced it, as I'm sure you feel it under the surface.
Savage.
I don't know whether tonight's discussion is based upon what I would call Obamaphobia, which could be entered into the DSM at some point, which people have a morbid dread of Obama. I do know that there are phobias that are very real. You may have some of them yourself. Claustrophobia, the morbid dread of closed spaces. Agoraphobia, the morbid dread of open spaces. You know the others, right? Aquaphobia, morbid dread of water. Pyrophobia, morbid dread of fire. Acrophobia, morbid dread of heights. Nyctophobia, morbid dread of darkness. Ophidiophobia, morbid dread of snakes. Astrophobia, morbid dread of lightning. Serenophobia, morbid dread of thunder. And I would add to this, Obamaphobia, a morbid dread of Obama. So it could be that these are, this is a phobia now that's raging through the minds of millions of Americans who previously would have been afraid of heights or dogs or cats and such, right? But now they're afraid of the president because of unknown reasons or because of real reasons, and it's tied now to this purging of the military. They fired General Kerry, a man with a luminous, wonderful past, in charge of 9,600 people, three operational wings, and served in Operations Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom. He won 13 major awards. That's after they fired Vice Admiral Tim Giardina as second in command of U.S. Strategic Command. His job was to oversee the nation's nuclear weapons forces. He was demoted to a two-star admiral for made-up garbage. Made-up garbage. So they said they fired them because they failed something or other. It could be that they're incompetent. After all, the people who fired them are probably far more competent. I mean, look at the people reviewing their credentials. The four horsewomen of the apocalypse. Hillary Clinton oversaw Benghazi. We know she's far more competent than General Michael Kerry. Susan Rice, far more competent than these generals. Valerie Jarrett, far more competent than these generals. Michelle Obama, far more competent than these generals. So as I say, you know, you've got to understand that women rule over us, and they're competent women. They're far more competent than our white male generals. And therefore, you should rest easier tonight. You should turn this show off immediately. You should listen to it. You should watch The Real Housewives of New Jersey. Or perhaps you should turn on MSNBC for some more government news under the guise of being for the little people as they come and go in their limousines. Or perhaps you can turn on, there's always internet porn, I mean, to relax you.
There's nothing wrong with it. Just ask the shrinks. I mean, if it feels good, do it. Why not do it in the road? Don't be uptight. Why don't you drop that white Anglo-Saxon Protestant rigidity? Just let it all hang out. You know, I mean, after all, you don't have to really think. In the new America, thinking could be a crime. This leads to Obamaphobia, I suppose. Could be a new DSM entry. You could be treated by the government for that. I mean, the inordinate, the dreaded fear, morbid dread of Obama could require government agents to arrest you and take you in for treatment under Obamacare. Because there's no reason to fear him. He's a nice man with a nice family. Now, some would say he's a demagogue who appeals to the prejudices and hatreds of the population. Some would say that this demagogue foments social discontent in order to further his own political ambitions, but they again should probably be arrested. Any psychiatrist that says that should be stripped of all of his assignments at a university for calling Obama a demagogue and probably, I don't know, put into a mental hospital. Some would say he's merely a martinet who is fanatic and is insistent on blind discipline from his subordinates. But I would say that anyone who says that is just being mean and probably a racist. And they should be very careful, because I'm sure one of the reverends or other would declare that you're a racist if you criticize the great man. If you think he's a Judas, then you're totally insane and probably un-American. If you don't trust Obama, if you call him a traitor, then no doubt you are not a real American, and you should be investigated. You should be invited to visit one of the Washington monuments in the middle of the night and drive around in circles. That's as simple as that. Or go jogging in Marcy Park at 3 in the morning to relax yourself. 855. So you want to move on? Something stupid like a menu or whatever? Would you like me to give you a Hunan recipe or something? All right, so let's go to John McCain in clip 4 for a laugh-a-thon. Let's go now to the Stockholm Syndrome, John McCain in clip 4. Let's have a laugh with clip 4.
The whole premise of shutting down the government was the repeal of Obamacare. I fought against Obamacare harder than any of the people who wanted to shut down the government.
I
campaigned all over this country in 2012 saying elect Mitt Romney and we'll repeal and replace Obamacare. We weren't going to defund Obamacare, and so we shut down the government, and then that gave the opportunity for this to be terribly, awfully mismanaged and mishandled by the White House.
Do you have any idea what he just said? Oh, is he ready for retirement? Let's see. We have Pelosi. Nah. She was good for a laugh with Si Se Puede. I don't want to play that. Ted Cruz, not that interesting. Now let's go to Dead Man's Pants from Train Tracks on the Savage Nation. Let's go to Train Tracks. They say, you know, I loved your childhood stories, and the most interesting one to me was Dead Man's Pants. So now, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, Dead Man's Pants. Growing up in the Bronx as I did, the man child in the promised land, I didn't have many of the luxuries most kids with their hats on back would take for granted today. My father was an immigrant. He worked his fingers to the bone. We simply didn't have the money to afford more than the basics, so as you might expect, I cherished and took care of the things I had. As a kid, I'd line up my shoes under my bed at night. Neat, like in the military. I made sure they were polished, too. I'm sure some shrink today would say I suffered from ADD or other compulsive behavior disorders and should have been put on a regimen of drugs. I wonder what they'd say about the fact that through most of my youth I wore secondhand pants from Dead Men. Many of the pants I wore as a preteen came off of stiffs cut down to fit me. Now, don't get me wrong. My father was a good man. He ran a small antique store with mostly 19th century stuff. On the side, at least in the beginning, he sold used goods as well. A man's got to do what a man's got to do to make ends meet, right? Occasionally, he would go to an auction after a man died and buy the entire estate. The clocks, the dishes, the mirrors, whatever the man had. The pants, the shirts, the whole deal. You get the picture? Back at the store, as he sorted the stuff for resale, he'd take a closer look at the suit. Once he got a hot shafter and mark suit from a dead man. Now, what's he going to do? Toss it in the garbage like they do today? In those days, it wasn't in him to throw out a good worsted fabric. Instead, he brought home the pants to me. I remember my father called me to the bedroom and showed them to me like the head tailor at Nordstrom's department store. He'd say, "Now, Michael, get a good look at the fabric." I wanted to vomit. I got a migraine because I knew what was coming. "Take a look at the quality of this fabric." He's working me like a salesman. He's unrolling the pants on the bed. I can see it to this day. He unrolls it like he's selling me a bolt of hand-woven cloth. He would say, "You can't get fabric like this anywhere." I wanted to say, "Of course not, Dad. They only sell stuff like that for men who died." You know, it was like special clothing for the undertaker.
Even if I had said something, that wouldn't have changed one thing. He'd go downtown and the pants would come back fit for me. You know, shortened without the legs taken in properly. I'm sorry. They ended up baggy like an Abbott and Costello pair of pants. I'm sorry. They ended up baggy like an Abbott and Costello pair of pants. Even if they had fit me properly, there was something repugnant about the whole idea. Like I said, I knew how to make do with whatever was at hand. There's an old saying, the man with no shoes complains until he meets the man with no feet. The fact that I didn't have much more than a place to sleep in my first little apartment after college was okay with me. At least I wasn't wearing dead man's pants. Little did I know that one day those awful pants would serve as a metaphor for the shift in my political orientation. You might find it interesting that I wasn't always an independent conservative. I was raised a Democrat, blue-collar home. My dad was a Democrat, my mom was a Democrat, most of my relatives still vote Democrat. To an immigrant family whose parents came of age during the Great Depression, President Franklin Delano Roosevelt was the great white savior. Aside from being the only U.S. president reelected to office three times, he gained lasting political mileage with the relief that his New Deal offered. As you might expect, then, my father used to tell me, Michael, all I know is the Democrats are for the little guy and the Republicans are for big business. In a way, his attempt to sell me on the political leanings of the Democrat Party was no different than his sales job with the dead man's pants. He was selling me a failed ideology that should have been buried long ago. So as a young man, not seeing things as clearly as I do now, I voted as my dad did, since I didn't understand politics. But as I grew older, that view would change completely. The turning point in my thinking can be traced back to my first job out of college as a social worker in the Upper West Side of New York. All of my so-called clients were minorities. Now, I was a good liberal at the time, having had my brain washed at one of the city universities in New York by a whole slew of European immigrants who, instead of kissing the ground when they got here, urinated on the sacred soil and the flag and immediately sought to instill communist philosophy in the minds of the young, myself included. I didn't know that at the time. I was just a wide-eyed liberal kid with an eye on changing the world. There I was, fresh out of Queens College. Having minored in sociology, I figured I'd take a job as a social worker to save the, quote, oppressed minority. I was always an idealist. I still am, as a matter of fact. But the abuses of the welfare system that I saw back then nauseated me and started me on my slow road to recovery. Day after day, I found person after person who was working, who had a job, but who claimed they didn't so they could get their government handout. Worse, they knew they were ripping off the welfare system and didn't bat an eye. How could I be so sure these hucksters weren't swindling Uncle Sam? I mean, you could argue that they were oppressed and didn't know the rules. Not me. At a young age, I learned a valuable lesson on how to spot people who smiled to your face while robbing you blind the second your back was turned.
Savage.
Well, that was Dead Man's Pants from my paperback Train Tracks in bookstores now. And it's interesting. It's actually a good mix, the way it was put together. And it's exactly as it is in the book. I read it from the book. That's interesting. What I did was I took the Dead Man's Pants story and tied it into the political system today, where many idealistic young people don't even realize how they're being ripped off. Or shall I say, the right word is not ripped off. They're just being used the way young people are always used. They're idealists. All young people are. If they're good, they're idealists. Yeah, what's the old saying? If you're not a liberal when you're 20, you have no heart. If you're still a liberal at 40, you have no mind. You ever hear that one? Train Tracks, Michael Savage, trying to mix some politics in with some stories. If I'm remembered for anything, in addition to my statement, borders, language, and culture, I would think that Michael Savage will be remembered as a broadcaster who took storytelling art to a new level. And I'll be right back.
Join the Savage Nation. Call now, 855-400-SAVAGE, 855-400-7282. Savage.
The biggest takeaway message of tonight's show from the Savage Nation thus far, if you just tuned in, I would give you two messages. One, Savage said, come January 1 when his show moves to Drive Time, East Coast, he's going to make a big announcement about the formation of a, let us say, and I don't mean me, but the formation of a nationalist party. I'm going to make a prediction. I'm going to tell you about that. And that today, by closing down the World War II and Vietnam veteran memorials, Obama is actually violating the Americans with Disabilities Act, and he is committing elder abuse. You can laugh at it all you want. Laugh all you want. Obama is doing exactly what liberals say they never do, which is attacking handicapped people.
You can take that to the bank. Mr. Sensitive Liberal, the man who lectures everyone about how we must be tolerant, especially of illegal aliens and those who would put a bomb in our mother's house in the name of religion. The man who preaches the most tolerance is, in fact, violating the Americans with Disabilities Act by closing off access to these memorials. Disabled people cannot access them. By putting up fences in front of these memorials, the few remaining veterans from World War II in wheelchairs, they can't get near their memorial. Now, that violates both the ADA and also other codes. And frankly, since he is targeting the elderly, or whoever in the administration has made this dumb decision, they are committing elder abuse and they are subject to a lawsuit. Now, that I'm not a lawyer, of course, is the fact that I'm not going to, you know, follow this up. But there are many lawyers out there who could sue the government for closing down these memorials on that basis. 855-407-282. Requests from train tracks. Which family stories do you want to hear the most? We play Dead Man's Pants, which if you missed it, you can read it yourself in a bookstore. I am not Abby Hoffman. I'm not going to tell you to go steal this book. I'm going to tell you to go read the book and buy it. There's another, you know, pet peeve of mine are the cheap people in bookstores today. I remember in my day, you weren't allowed to thumb magazines in a candy store. Little Mr. Schwartz would stand there with a beady eye, and if you went in, let's say you wanted to look at a baseball magazine, all you had to do was touch it, he made you buy it. Because he knew that once you soiled the magazine with your thumb, nobody would buy it. You know, you'd rifle through it until you got one that was not thumbed. He would look at you, get out of here, you're going to buy it or get out of here. Now you go with Barnes & Noble, they sit there all day long, they live for nothing. They don't even buy a piece of sponge cake. They read 20 magazines, 14 newspapers, and 3 books, and they walk out buying nothing. Have you seen this? And you wonder why Borders went out of business. And you wonder why my motto is Borders, Language, and Culture. It's not about the bookstore chain. No siree. So do you have a problem with my motto of Borders, Language, and Culture? Because as I announced in the last hour, when my show moves, God willing, come January to 3 to 6 p.m. East Coast time and noon to 3 p.m. West Coast time come January, and I take over Sean Hannity's slot on all Cumulus stations, and I give old Lou Costello a run for his money. When I give old Lou a run for his money, when I finally have stations in his time slot, I'm going to make some announcements in early January in the first shows that I think are going to shake up the political landscape. I can't tell you what they are tonight, but I'm going to make them. I can't tell you what they are tonight. Now, let me read you an email that I, Michael Savage, received today from a friend, well, a distant associate of mine. He's a wonderful man. And it's from a military veteran, and it's to Senator Patty Murray and Senator Maria Cantwell in Washington State. Dear Senators, it says, I have tried to live by the rules my entire life. My father was a command sergeant major, U.S. Army, who died of combat-related stresses shortly after his retirement. It was he who instilled in me those virtues he felt important, honesty, duty, patriotism, and obeying the laws of God and of our various governments. I have served my country, paid my taxes, worked hard, volunteered, and donated my fair share of money, time, and artifacts. Today, as I approach my 79th birthday, he writes, I am heartbroken when I look at my country and my government. I shall only point out a very few things abysmally wrong with which you can multiply by 1,000-fold. I have calculated that all the money I have paid in income taxes my entire life cannot even keep the Senate barbershop open for 1 year. Only heaven and a few tight-lipped actuarial types know what the Senate dining room costs the taxpayers. So please enjoy your haircuts and meals on us. Last year, the president spent an estimated $1.4 billion on himself and his family. Let me repeat that. Last year, President Obama spent an estimated $1.4 billion, capital B, on himself and his family. The vice president spends millions on hotels. They have had 8 vacations so far this year. And our House of Representatives and Senate have become America's answer to the Saudi royal family. You have become the perfumed princes and princesses of our country in the middle of the night. In the middle of the night, you voted in the Affordable Care Act, a.k.a. Obamacare, a bill which no more than a handful of senators or representatives read more than several paragraphs, crammed it down our throats, and then promptly exempted yourselves from it, substituting your own taxpayer-subsidized golden health care insurance. You live exceedingly well, senators. You eat and drink as well as the one percenters, consistently vote yourself perks and pay raises, while making 3.5 times the average U.S. individual income, and give up nothing while you, as well as the president and Veep, ask us to sacrifice due to sequestration, which, of course, you plan to blame the Republicans anyway. You understand very well the only two rules you need to know. One, how to get elected, and two, how to get reelected. And you do this with the aid of an eagerly willing and partisan press, speeches permeated with a certain economy of truth, and by buying the votes of the greedy, the ill-informed and uneducated citizens, and non-citizens too, many of whom do vote, who are looking for a handout rather than a job. Your so-called safety net, senators, has become a hammock for the lazy. And what is now about 49 or 50 million on food stamps, pretty much all Democrat voters, and the program is absolutely rife with fraud with absolutely no congressional oversight. I would offer that you are not entirely to blame. What changed you is the seductive environment of power in which you have immersed yourselves. And I'll pause right here, because I know there's a limit to how much anyone can listen to such heartfelt, brilliant, insightful writing. And it is from a military veteran at age 79 who has seen what the cesspool has become, called the United States government.
Savage.